Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Revamped John Ben Shepherd, Reviving Lecture Series by Ruth Campbell. The John Ben Shepherd Public Leadership Institute has been reimagined, and the Distinguished Lecture Series is being relaunched. Number one best-selling author and leading art preservation advocate Robert M. Edsel will be the speaker September 27th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Edsel wrote the book The Monuments Men, which was made into a movie. He tells a story of a small group of unlikely heroes, a group of men and one woman. They were museum curators. They were regular people who stepped up and preserved cultural treasures and works of art from the ravages of World War II and the Nazi regime, said Shelby Landgraf, director of community engagement for the Shepherd Leadership Institute. He tells this story, and it is an incredible story. This book, which became an award-winning movie, has really elevated him into a premier advocate for cultural preservation, for art preservation, and for reuniting art with its rightful owners. We're so excited to welcome him here to the University of Texas Permian Basin and to relaunch our Distinguished Lecture Series. Landgraf added that the Permian Basin knows the Distinguished Lecture Series well as something they can count on to elevate thought, ideas, and connection across the community. Vice President of Student Development and Leadership Becky Spurlock said, "There will be another distinguished lecture in the spring. Sometime later this fall, we'll announce that. That series will begin a regular pattern. I think we're looking at two or three lectures a year, and after the relaunch, we'll be able to begin putting out schedules further in advance. We're excited to bring back this very popular and beloved series," Spurlock said. She added that they anticipate adding another speaker series. The Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference also is programmed out of the JBS Public Leadership Institute. Part of Spurlock's charge when she arrived was to take the work that interim director, retired General Tony Cucullo, did as interim and continue to evolve into the future. We made some very good progress in that fall, and then, of course, the story that is repeated over and over is COVID came, and that derailed our planning to some extent," Spurlock said. "But I have to say, even though the news has been quiet, there's been really steady progress and growth. We have a lot to share." Spurlock said they partnered with a program and curriculum called LeaderShape. "We use their Catalyst training. We trained many trainers who could then go out and offer this one-day leadership program that is focused on teaching people how to develop a vision and how to go about making relationships and connections to drive that vision forward. We were very excited. In the spring, Shelby and Kate and our Dean of Students have trained 30 students during the Midland ISD intercession. We took that program into the high school. We expect to expand that this year, and we are going to be working with all of the ISDs in the area that are interested to have staff that will bring in that program. I do want to thank the Warren Charitable Foundation. They covered supplies and food for that training that we did with students at MISD. We, of course, offer that program to our UTPB students, so we've trained many of the UTPB students and will continue to do that," Spurlock said. Going to MISD and providing program and leadership development to young adults during its intercession was truly a first, Landgraf said. "One of the things the Shepherd Institute has done for a long time is encourage students to consider lives committed to public service, whether that's through career choices or volunteer time." The Shepherd Institute sponsored students to go on the Odessa and Midland Chamber fly-in program to Washington, D.C., because that is a program where you meet with your government representatives to talk about local issues and share what it means to be part of this community. The Shepherd Institute sponsored the students that went along on that trip, and then in addition to the itinerary that the students participated in, We created additional learning experiences for those students beyond just that event. That was such a successful event, we plan on continuing those kinds of partnerships. The chambers will go to Austin some years to advocate in Austin, and some years they'll go to D.C., and so both are great opportunities for us to bring students along to represent and learn about how to share what's important about the local community, Spurlock said. Landgraf said the students raved about the experience, and this was also a first for the Odessa-Midland community. The students that we brought in said not only did they feel better connected to the idea of public service, to the idea of government, but that they felt better connected to our local community because they made connections with business leaders, with energy executives, with nonprofit leaders, with community leaders, all within these few days in D.C. for the Midland-Odessa D.C. fly-in. As Dr. Spurlock and Dr. Woodley say, UT Permian Basin believes in being serial collaborators, and we really were able to walk that out with the Shepherd Leadership Institute, partnering with the chambers and bringing students. The chambers both agreed that having UT Permian Basin students as part of this event really made it even more special as far as advocating for the community, as far as telling the story of West Texas, and really presenting an entire community picture to Capitol Hill, Landgraf said. Spurlock added that the Shepherd Institute has provided leadership training programs with a school district that rented space on campus for a retreat. I have been asked to speak and talk about leadership at a number of local events and organizations. That is always in the name of the Shepherd Leadership Institute. She most recently talked to the business and professional women of the Permian Basin, that it was in Midland. I also spoke at the West Texas Women's event, which was a big connecting event. We sponsored and supported a number of students to go to leadership experiences. We helped students that wanted to connect to leadership experiences in their areas. We are part of a group called Project Males that supports historically minoritized men in college, and we sent students to that program. We sent students to the Southern Black Leadership Caucus so that they could grow in their leadership skills. We supported a lot of students to go to additional leadership conferences and then bring that knowledge back to campus to share it with their fellow students, Spurlock said. Landgraf added that they also provided some leadership and communication development to the Nonprofit Management Center, which has been a community partner that they have worked with to walk out the ideals of leadership development. Spurlock said the JBS Public Leadership Institute is located inside the Presidential Archives, which is its own operation inside the Buddy and Shirley West building. Landgraf said they are proud that the Leadership Institute helped forge and design the partnership between itself and the Ellen Newell Art Museum to ensure that the only Smithsonian-accredited museum between Dallas and El Paso can stay open during its renovations, as the Institute is providing space to the museum. They are partnering with us to reanimate the Presidential Archives, so this is truly a beautiful partnership. Everyone walks away better. Our community is better for it. It reopens the Presidential Archives, and it allows the Ellen Newell Art Museum to stay open. It truly hits at our core values here at UT Permian Basin and the Shepherd Leadership Institute, and that we believe in collaboration very deeply, and that we believe in serving our region, and we are doing both with this beautiful partnership, Landgraf said. Spurlock said a good example of the way his partnership can elevate things is that the Ellen Newell is going to create some special programming in partnership with the Robert Edsel Distinguished Lecture. Landgraf said they listened to community stakeholders as they were evaluating speakers, and a number of them mentioned Edsel because they know him personally. It was someone who we knew would have a positive impact and would inspire our community. He started out, he's a Texas man himself. He was first a nationally ranked tennis player, so he has a background in athletics, and moreover, the interesting West Texas tie is that he worked in the energy industry for essentially more than a decade. And back in the 80s, he founded a very successful oil and gas exploration company that was on the forefront of horizontal drilling, Landgraf said. He has a very unique perspective, having some professional experience in athletics, having professional experience in the oil and gas industry. He says himself that if you ask him what he's best at, it's getting things done, that he doesn't believe in over-hyping, that he believes in a commitment to excellence and getting things done. And that is such a true embodiment of the West Texas spirit. We don't believe in overselling things. We believe in getting things done, and Robert embodies that. And his energy is contagious, and we know that his story will inspire our community, Landgraf said. Quick hits. Back to school COVID-19 vaccine clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a back-to-school COVID-19 vaccine clinic for ages 6 months and older from 8 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. each Thursday throughout September. Permian Basin Golf Classic. Oilfield Helping Hands has scheduled its fourth annual Permian Golf Classic starting at 10:30 a.m. today at Andrews Golf Course. Prizes will be awarded. Participants will receive breakfast at registration and a variety of drinks and food options throughout the course. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Read to Felix. Felix, therapy dog, loves to hear stories from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays through October 27th in the Children's Department. Call 432-332-0633 or visit actor.lib.tx.us. Back the Blue Firearm Drawing. The Professional Police Officers Association of Odessa will present a firearm drawing benefiting the Permian Basin Assist the Officer Foundation today at the MCM Elegante Ballroom, 5200 East University Boulevard. Doors open at 6 p.m., dinner at 6:30 p.m., and gun drawings begin at 7:15 p.m. There will be cigars, drinks, and firearm drawing. Firearm drawing will include a variety of 20 to 30 firearms. Winners must be able to pass a background check. For more information or to buy tickets, visit ppoaodessa.com. Wine, Women, and Shoes. Wine, Women, and Shoes benefiting Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy has been scheduled from 6 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. today at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. There will be wine tasting, designer shopping, culinary delights, raffles, silent auctions, and more. For tickets or more information, visit winewomenandshoes.com/event/Midland or midlandcofair.com. LULAC and Hispanic Heritage of Odessa will kick off Hispanic Heritage Month at 6 p.m. today at Ahuas Restaurant, 2100 Andrews Highway. Call Carol Uranga, 432-349-9840. Comedy Show. Wagner Newell Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788 Midland, will present Philippe Esparza, The Unmasked Tour, at 7:30 p.m. September 16th. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Visit wagnernewell.com. Local News Roundup. Odessan accused of beating his child's mother. An Odessa man is facing an aggravated robbery charge after his child's mother accused him of attacking her with his fists, a tricycle, and a rock. According to an OPD report, a 34-year-old woman called 911 around 7 a.m., August 28th. She told officers she had gone to the 800 block of Fall Avenue to pick up DeCoven Johnson's grandfather, and when she got out of the car, Johnson, 31, attacked her. She said Johnson punched her all over her head, picked up a child's tricycle and began hitting her in the head with it, and then threw a rock at her. She also said Johnson choked her while she was laying on the ground. Throughout the assault, the woman said Johnson demanded her iPhone 13 before taking it and fleeing the scene. Officers saw a large bump and cut on the woman's forehead, a cut under her chin, and multiple bruises on her chin. Johnson was arrested on suspicion of aggravated robbery early Wednesday morning. He remained in the Ector County Jail Wednesday evening on a $75,000 surety bond. Odessan arrested after child shows meth in system. The strange behavior of a 10-year-old boy has led to the arrest of an Odessa man on an endangering a child charge. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, Medical Center Hospital staff called the Sheriff's Office on August 7th after a boy came into the hospital with a finger injury. The staff told deputies the boy was continuously biting one of his index fingers, and lab work showed he had methamphetamine in his system. The boy's 26-year-old mother told deputies her son was acting normal when she sent him out to play with his siblings, but after a while his brother brought him inside and said there was something wrong with him. The woman said she brought him to her mother's house and then the hospital because he was unable to focus and kept biting his hand. According to the report, she told deputies she didn't know where her son could have gotten the methamphetamine because she didn't use it and never has it in her residence. However, she also said her boyfriend, Tyson Mullen, 31, was known to use the drug and had been over the night before. During a search of the woman's house, officers found multiple methamphetamine pipes and drug paraphernalia within reach of the children. One of the boy's siblings also told a forensic interviewer that their mother told him his brother had gotten into some stuff in her room before taking him to their grandmother's house. Mullen was booked into the Ector County Jail Tuesday and remained there as of Wednesday afternoon on a $10,000 surety bond. Endangering a child criminal negligence is a state jail felony, punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison. Man arrested on suspicion of accident involving death. An Odessa man arrested earlier this month after police said he left the scene of a motorcycle accident, is now facing an accident involving death charge. According to the OPD, Mark Halbert, 33, was traveling south on South Grant Avenue on his Harley-Davidson around 11 p.m. August 23rd, when the driver of a Toyota Camry struck him after failing to yield at a stop sign. The driver then fled the scene. Officers learned a vehicle matching the suspect vehicle was parked at the Chaparral Village Apartments nearby and had damage consistent with being in a crash. According to an OPD report, officers learned the owner of the vehicle lived in a specific apartment in the complex and went to the apartment. Stephen Ray Ramos, 21, admitted to being the driver and said he fled the scene because he was scared. Ramos was arrested on suspicion of failure to stop and render aid, but he was rearrested Tuesday on suspicion of accident involving death because Halbert died August 31st. According to the report, an autopsy revealed Halbert died after suffering brain damage due to blunt force trauma. If convicted, Ramos could be sentenced to 2 to 20 years in prison. He remained in the Ector County Jail Wednesday night after his surety bond was doubled to $40,000. DPS reports two deaths in 2 days on Interstate Highway 20. The Texas Department of Public Safety issued press releases that detailed two fatalities on Interstate 20 in West Texas. The first happened at 2:33 p.m. Sunday in Martin County, about 25 miles west of Stanton, when a 23-year-old El Paso woman who was a passenger, died in a rollover after the driver fell asleep. Fabian Hernandez, 28, of El Paso, was driving a 2006 Toyota Tacoma, while the passengers were 23-year-old Ashley Hernandez of El Paso and a 3-year-old girl whose name wasn't released by DPS. Ashley Hernandez and the 3-year-old girl weren't wearing their seatbelts. DPS detailed the preliminary information showed the Tacoma was traveling west on Interstate Highway 20. The driver of the Tacoma fell asleep while traveling at highway speeds and partially crossed into the center median. The driver then overcorrected back onto the roadway, causing the Tacoma to roll over multiple times. Ashley Hernandez was transported to Martin County Hospital, where she was pronounced dead by Martin County Justice of the Peace, Nancy Bradshaw. Fabian Hernandez was transported to Medical Center Hospital in serious condition, while the three-year-old girl was transported to Covenant Medical Center in Lubbock. The second occurred at 10:27 p.m. Monday, about a quarter of a mile west of Big Spring, when an 83-year-old man died in a two-vehicle collision. Eric Lee Givens, 34, of San Antonio, was driving a 2020 Freightliner with a traveler traveling eastbound in the left lane of Interstate Highway 20. Thomas McCoy Kelly, 83, of Big Spring, was driving a 2015 Dodge Journey westbound in the eastbound lanes on IH-20 in the left lane. The Journey collided with the Freightliner, and Kelly was pronounced dead by Howard County Justice of the Peace, Angela Griffin. The Odessa Police Department is asking for the public's help in locating an Odessa man who has been missing 3 weeks. According to the police department, Patrick Anderson, 43, hasn't been seen by his loved ones since August 21st. His wife found his car on August 26th at 4000 Tanglewood Lane. Anyone with information is asked to call Detective Jay Santana at 432-335-3347 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. The case number is 22-00-14061. Local News Roundup. Lubbock man killed in Midland. A 57-year-old Lubbock pedestrian was struck and killed in Midland Tuesday night. According to the City of Midland, Tony Ray Vance failed to yield the right-of-way to vehicle traffic and was hit in the 4300 block of West Loop 250 North South Service Road around 10 p.m. Vance was pronounced dead at the scene. Student arrested for making threat at school. ECISD police arrested a fifth-grade student at Ross Elementary School Wednesday afternoon after he told classmates that he was going to shoot up the school and shaped his hand into the form of a gun. The student did not have a weapon, and ECISD officers say students and staff at the school were not in danger. The student is charged with Class A misdemeanor, threat of use of weapons on school grounds or bus. He will also face disciplinary action according to the ECISD Student Code of Conduct. ECISD leaders ask parents to remind their children, statements like this are not considered jokes and will also be taken seriously. The safety of the school is top priority, and severe consequences will result from threats like this. Patrick Speaks at Barn Door by Royal McGregor. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Republican, Texas, spoke for about an hour at the barn door on Wednesday afternoon. Patrick is traveling on a statewide bus tour where there are 131 stops scheduled. The statewide tour began on August 24th at the Alamo, and on Wednesday he spoke at the barn door. Joining Patrick on the West Texas leg of the bus tour is Midlander Kevin Sparks, who is the GOP candidate for State Senate District 31. The crowd included Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven, District 1 Councilman Mark Mata, and at-large Councilwoman Denise Swanner. Mike Gardner, the Ector County Commissioner for Precinct 1, was also in attendance, along with County Judge-elect Dustin Fawcett and GOP candidate for Ector County Commissioner for Precinct 4, Billy Hall. Patrick greeted, shook hands, and briefly spoke with everyone at the back room of the barn door. Before Patrick spoke, local Republican Chris Crow gifted Patrick a gratitude rock. Patrick said that he is going to keep the gratitude rock with a plastic cross in his wallet. Patrick opened with asking the room if Democratic Texas gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke was going to win anything in Texas, and the response was a resounding no. Patrick said he doesn't believe the Republican Party is going to lose Texas, but he said the reason for the bus tour is to make sure the deal is closed.
And now we'll read a few high school sports articles. I'll begin with stories published in the Midland Reporter Telegram. Our first article is published Thursday, September 15th. This is from the Saturday, September 10th edition. High school football, MHS suffers first loss of season in 27-8 defeat versus Amarillo High, by Christopher Hattern. Midland High head football coach Thad Fortune said the Bulldogs didn't play good enough to win in any phase of the game against Amarillo High Thursday night. The Sandies outgained the Bulldogs 355-177 on 9 fewer plays during a 27-8 win at Astound Broadband Stadium. Mason Graham threw 2 second-half touchdown passes to help Amarillo High turn a 14-8 halftime lead into a 3-score game. The Sandies, 1-2, who had a -8 margin in the turnover ratio entering the game, were able to win the category this time by a 2-0 margin. The Bulldogs, 2-1, dropped their first game after their run-heavy Veer offense was limited to 149 yards on the ground. The Bulldog offense got off to a sloppy start with 2 fumbled snaps on the first possession. The second one was costly as Amarillo's Tom Stafford recovered the loose ball at the Sandy 45. Amarillo capitalized off the opportunity when Graham rolled out and completed a 20-yard touchdown pass to Connor Hazel to the corner of the end zone with 5:06 in the first quarter. Following another lackluster MHS possession, Amarillo got the ball at the Bulldog 48 and took advantage of 2 plays later when Pius Vokes broke away on a 39-yard TD run on 3rd-and-1. The Sandies led 14-0 with 18 seconds left in the first. It was good to come out and score on the opening drive, Sandies head coach Chad Denman said. It was good to get a stop there, get the ball back, and go up 14 points. Anytime you can do that, especially with a group of guys that run an offense like that. That offense is ground and pound, keep the ball away from you and control the block. We were able to get points early. The Bulldogs finally put together a quality offensive series on the third possession by converting 3 third down conversions. Jake Cunningham ran for 7 yards twice on a 3rd-and-3 and a 3rd-and-7 to move the chains. Cunningham later threw to James King for a 7-yard gain on 3rd-and-7 at the Amarillo 40. MHS made the third down success all worthwhile when Mecky McCoy scored on a 14-yard run with 6:28 left in the second quarter. Jakey Urias ran it for 2, cutting the Bulldogs' deficit to 14-8. The Bulldogs had a chance to score before the half when Cunningham gained 17 yards on a keeper to give his team a first and 10 at the 33. But MHS stalled, and Cunningham's Hail Mary attempt at the buzzer was corralled by Amarillo's Rylan Leathers for an interception to end the half. Going into halftime down 6, I liked where we were considering how we played, Fortune said. I don't think we played that well to be down 6. I thought maybe we could come out and turn the tide. We just never could. We didn't get the stops when we needed them, and then we didn't answer when they scored. The Sandies took control of the game for good when they needed only 4 plays to score on the opening drive of the second half. Graham completed a 22-yard screen pass to Vokes to put Amarillo up 20-8 with 10-10 in the third. On the Sandies' next drive, Graham launched a deep pass to Division I recruit Jamison Garcia for a 48-yard TD pass with 36 seconds left. Amarillo led 27-8 after going on 11-play, 96-yard drive. Graham threw for 195 yards on 14 of 18 passing. Vokes had 13 carries for 86 yards, and Garcia had 4 catches for 86 yards. MHS punted on its first 2 possessions of the second half and turned the ball over on downs on its third and final series. We just didn't get in a rhythm offensively, And so that kind of puts a kink in everything, Fortune said. You can't spot them two scores. They've got some weapons offensively. I thought our quarterback played really well. You can't spot them two scores like we did. All the things that we want to build our program on and things that we want to do, we didn't do. Cunningham led the Bulldogs with 56 yards rushing on 13 attempts. MHS visits Lubbock, Monterey at 7 p.m. on September 16th. And now from the MRT Sports section, published Tuesday, September 13th. High school football, superb special teams ignites Rebels' rout of Abilene High, by Christopher Hattern. While it was another prolific day for the legacy offense, it was the special teams that swung the momentum during last Friday's non-district football game against Abilene High. The Rebels special teams unit gave its offense two short fields with consecutive recoveries on kickoffs. The recoveries helped LHS turn a 7-7 tie into a 20-7 advantage quickly. The Rebels never let up, scoring 56 unanswered points at one point during a 56-20 rout of the Eagles at Astound Broadband Stadium. With the score tied at 7 after the Abilene and LHS offenses traded blows, Rebels junior kicker Hayden Smith booted the ensuing kickoff high into the air. The Eagles' return team fumbled the ball, which was recovered by LHS junior Damian Johnson at the Abilene 30. The Rebels took full advantage of the short field as Marcos Davila threw to Deona Sonier for a 7-yard touchdown pass on a screen to put LHS up 14-7. On the next kickoff, Smith squibbed it, and the loose ball was recovered by LHS junior Jesus Robledo at the Eagle 38. Once again, the Rebels, 2-1, cashed in on the favorable real estate as Davila heaved a bomb to a wide-open Colin Brazell for a 36-yard touchdown pass. The Rebels led 20-7 with 1 minute left in the first, while keeping the ball away from Abilene High's offense for a string of three possessions. "We wanted to chip the ball and onside kick the ball," Legacy head coach Clint Hartman said. "We want to keep pressure on them. We've had kickers before that could kick it out of the end zone. If we don't think we can do that all the time, we've got to be able to make them protect something. Each week, we'll start putting in more fakes and stuff like that." The Rebels special teams, which are coached by assistant Hector Lopez, almost had a third consecutive recovery on a kickoff, but the play was nullified by a penalty. "Like Hartman says, special teams is really an important aspect of the game," Johnson said. "Every week we practice it and we go hard at it. He just wanted us to go hard and realize that every phase of the game is important." Davila barely had any balls hit the turf as he completed an eye-popping 20 of 23 passes for 355 passing yards, 5 TD passes, and no interceptions. Davila's precision passing helped two Rebel receivers eclipse the 100-yard mark, as Sonier had 9 catches for 172 yards and 3 TDs, while Breck Stevens made 3 receptions for 100 yards and 2 TDs. Davila and the Rebels' passing attack had 5 passes for 36 yards or more. "We definitely have to work toward being great," Davila said. "We still have some room for improvement. I want to get 6 touchdowns in one game, so I am definitely going to go for that. And we're just going to keep on practicing as hard as we did this week, and we'll be good." Davila and LHS bounced back from a 48-27 road loss to Class 5A Division I power Amarillo Tascosa the previous week. "He's a good football player," Hartman said of Davila. "The University of Houston was here watching him tonight. Because we had a rough game against Tascosa doesn't mean Marcus can't play anymore. I've said this. Quarterbacks get too much credit when we win and too much blame when we lose." The Rebels will host Cibolo Steel, 3-0, in a showdown between storied Class 6A programs at 7 p.m. Friday at Astound Broadband Stadium. Steel was ranked number 13 in the Dave Campbell's Texas football rankings entering the third week of the season. "Next week, we just have to come out and have a great game plan, execute our game plan, and just play Rebel football," Johnson said. Now we'll move to the Odessa American. From their sports section, Saturday, September 10th. High school football, lessons planned. Broncos with plenty to work on after loss to Keller High, by Lee Scheide. The final score of the Odessa High, Keller High football Thursday night would have casual fans thinking the game wasn't close. The visiting Indians won 50-21 using a dominating running game to keep the Broncos' defense on the field and tired. In reality, four sequences doomed Odessa High on this night. Twice, the Broncos failed to score points when they had the ball inside the Keller 10 and then watched the Indians drive the field for touchdowns. One of those drives was extended when Odessa High was penalized for being offside after an incomplete pass on 4th-and-3. Finally, forcing Keller into a 36-yard field goal attempt on a 4th-and-6 at the OHS 19 early in the third quarter, the Broncos again were undisciplined and jumped offsides, giving the Indians a 4th-and-1 at the 14 that they immediately cashed in for a touchdown. "We are going to have to fix the mistakes," Odessa High coach Dusty Ortiz said. "The penalties, that's just not being disciplined, and that can be fixed. And we need to finish drives." It was the first loss of the season for the Broncos, 2-1, while Keller improved to 3-0. Running backs Cameron Rayford and Jaden Hart led the Indians on the ground, while Amarion Henry was the top target in the passing game. Rayford finished with 18 carries for 144 yards and 3 touchdowns, while Hart added 120 yards rushing on 10 carries with 1 touchdown. Henry caught 5 passes for 132 yards and 2 touchdowns. Keller High had scoring plays of 42 yards, Hart run, and 63 yards, Henry reception, in the first quarter. The Indians amassed 327 yards of offense in the first half, 200 rushing, 127 passing. "We just couldn't get lined up right," Ortiz said. "They went even faster than we do, and we weren't getting in the right spot. Keller is a good team, and that's why you play teams like that, to learn and get better. That's what we'll do. We'll look at the video and see what needs to be corrected and work on that." Broncos quarterback Jaylen Jones was 20 of 32 passing for 262 yards and 1 touchdown. Wide receiver Ivan Kerrion, again, was the top target with 9 receptions for 188 yards and the touchdown. He also had 2 rushing touchdowns as the Broncos are finding different ways to get him the football. Cameron has 22 receptions for 574 yards through 3 games and needs one more catch to become the first Broncos receiver with 100 career catches. And oddly enough, there is just one very small snippet of an article about the Permian Panthers game from this past week. This is from the Sunday, September 11th, Odessa American. "Panthers survive. Amarillo. The Permian football team was able to adjust in the second half to come away with a 13-12 victory against Amarillo Tascosa in non-district play Friday at Dick Bivens Stadium. The host Rebels led 6-0 at halftime. The Panthers, 3-0, scored twice after the break, with quarterback Rodney Hall finding wide receiver Jaquan Richardson along the left sideline for the game-winning score. Now we'll move to college football. This is from the Monday, September 12th edition of the Odessa American. Frantic finish. UTPB ties game late, beats Western Colorado in double overtime. By Lee Scheide, Midland. The roughing the punter penalty the UTPB football team took after tying the game against Western Colorado with less than 3 minutes to play could have cast a dark cloud over the Falcons' comeback. Instead, it turned out to be a silver lining. That's because the punter for the visiting Mountaineers, Luke Nethercott, also was the starting quarterback. Yes, the Falcons lost possession after a punt, but Western Colorado lost a leader that had put it in position to win the game over the first 58 minutes. Connor Desch came on in relief, but was unable to find the end zone in regulation. After both teams scored in the first overtime, the Falcons forced 3 straight incompletions by Desch in the second extra period and a missed field goal. That allowed UTPB to work the ball into field goal range, and when Carson Roberts split the uprights with his 35-yard attempt, the Falcons had earned a 34-31 comeback victory Saturday at Astound Broadband Stadium. "Thing I'm most proud about is they kept fighting," UTPB head coach Justin Kerrigan said of his team. It took a lot of grit to go down like we did and keep battling back. The sideline was huge. Everybody was positive. Anytime something went wrong on the field, it didn't faze anybody. They bounced back on the next play, and everybody on the sideline did a great job of keeping the energy up. UTPB improved to 1-1 on the season, while Western Colorado dropped to 0-2. Quarterback Dylan Graham was 17 of 38 passing for 185 yards and 2 touchdowns with 1 interception. Running back Corey Harris finished with 78 yards on 21 carries with 1 touchdown, a 5-yard scamper in overtime that forced the Mountaineers to score to extend the game. They did, but couldn't put any points on the board in the second extra period, setting up Roberts' heroics. "That felt amazing," Graham said. "The team showed a lot of grit. That's a good team over there, and we showed that no matter what, we have so much grit and we can play with anybody. No matter what the circumstance is, we'll always fight back." Mountaineers quarterback Luke Nethercott was 18 of 34 passing for 160 yards and 2 touchdowns with 2 interceptions. He also rushed for 1 score. Beside the outcome, another bright spot for the Falcons was the play of the defense after struggling in the season-opening loss to Southwest Baptist. Against Western Colorado, the Falcons came out with much better energy and a determination to stop the run and make the Mountaineers one-dimensional, and it worked. After allowing nearly 300 yards rushing in Week 1, UTPB held Western Colorado to 23 yards rushing on the night and forced 2 fumbles. The Falcons also had 2 interceptions on the night, one returned by Donta Stewart for a 2-yard touchdown just 2:31 into the third quarter. That put UTPB ahead 16-10, but Western Colorado proved it wasn't ready to let the Falcons get comfortable. Nethercott directed a 5-play, 53-yard drive that culminated with a 20-yard touchdown pass to Sage Yazzie with 2:32 remaining on the third quarter. After an interception on the ensuing UTPB drive, Nethercott capped a 3-play, 35-yard drive with a 2-yard TD run for a 24-16 lead with 27 seconds remaining in the quarter. That's how things stood when the Falcons regained possession with 4:01 remaining in the game at their own 30 after Western Colorado missed a 47-yard field goal that would have put the game out of reach. Graham started the drive with a 23-yard completion to Tim Wiggins to get into Mountaineers territory. But a run by Harris went nowhere, and then Graham was sacked on second down for a loss, bringing up 3rd-and-17. Wide receiver Marcus Molina kept the drive alive by hauling in a 29-yard pass over the middle to move the ball to the Western Colorado 25. The Mountaineers were called for holding on the next play to put the ball at the 15, and Graham proceeded to find wide receiver MJ Link in the third left corner of the end zone for a touchdown. When tight end Brock Johnson ripped the 2-point conversion for the hands of a defender, the game was tied 24-24 with 2:23 to play in the game. "It was nice to finally get MJ the ball in a spot he could make the catch," Graham said. "And then Brock, when I let the pass go, I was like, that's going to be behind him. But he went and got it and made a great play." And now we'll go back to the MRT, the sports section published on Wednesday, September 14th, where we'll first read the area football notebook. Greenwood refocuses for number 7, Shallow Water, by Oscar Leroy. Getting healthier and refocused have been the top objectives for the Greenwood football team this week in practice. The Rangers fell to 1-2 on the season after a 26-10 loss at Andrews on Friday, as the Mustangs held Greenwood to 153 total yards and forced 4 turnovers. Greenwood coach Rusty Purser said the loss was certainly an eye-opener for his team. "Andrews played great defensively, and they exposed some things that we need to get better at," Purser said. "Some of that includes getting better with our blocking assignments and doing some better things up front. Schematically, we need to have an answer when things go south. Those things have been our primary focus over the last couple of days. We have had good workouts the last 2 mornings, and we have the right mindset." The Rangers have been banged up, but Purser said they will be getting junior offensive lineman Carlos Barraza and senior defensive lineman Alex Estrada back this week. Purser added that they are planning to move Barraza from right guard to left tackle, as that position has used three different kids in three games. "I thought against West Plains, the offensive line did a pretty good job," Purser said. "Against Andrews, we didn't have any answers, and we couldn't do some of our basic stuff. We had the inability to be as physical as Andrews. Those two linebackers for them had an exceptional game. They did everything it took to win the football game." Greenwood will look to bounce back at 7 p.m. Friday when it travels to face Shallowwater, 3-0, the number 7 ranked team in Class 3A Division 1. The Mustangs are coming off a 55-18 blowout of Hereford, and they also have wins against Monahans, 47-27, and Seminole, 40-27 this season. They are a really good 3A football team, and they are the biggest offensive line that we have seen all year. There are five or six guys who would be on the field for Legacy or Midland High, Purser said. That in itself is going to be a challenge for us. Big Spring gets comeback victory. Big Spring coach Cannon McWilliams said his team didn't have its best game, but still found a way to beat Monahans 24-20 in a come-from-behind fashion last Friday. McWilliams said the Steers, 2-1, were down 11 with about 7.5 minutes remaining before they came back to win it, as Gavin Padron found Kavian Ford for a 23-yard TD pass late in the game. "It was good to see our kids never give up, especially after turning the ball over three times," McWilliams said. "They kept fighting, and luckily the defense played really well, and they kept giving us the ball back. I think it goes to our motto, continue to row no matter what happens. We were able to overcome. Even though bad things may happen sometimes, if you keep fighting, good things will happen." McWilliams said they are getting healthier, and last week, wide receiver kicker Eli Kobos, ankle, returned to limited action. The Steers next travel to face Sweetwater, 1-2, at 7 p.m. Friday to continue what has been a long-standing rivalry against between the two schools, going all the way back to 1909. Cahoma continues to get better. Cahoma coach Chris Joslin said he's been pleased to see the progress of his young team this season, and it seems like the Bulldogs' confidence continues to grow with each game. The Bulldogs, 2-1, got their second straight victory on Friday with an impressive 51-21 win at Kermit. Cahoma outgained Kermit 412-295 and took a 34-13 lead at the half. Seven different Bulldogs ran with the ball, and six different players caught passes against the Yellow Jackets. "The kids are playing hard and playing well," Joslin said. "I've been saying that we had to spread the ball around this year. Even when the game wasn't in jeopardy last week, we had a lot of different kids touch the ball and doing a good job of spreading it around." Freshman quarterback Boyd Cox completed 10 of 16 passes for 188 yards and four TDs, and Joslin said it was good to see him grow up in that position. Joslin added that Billy Bailey also played some at quarterback, plus four other positions in the game. "It's good to see Boyd and Billy taking on their new roles and helping us win," Joslin said. Cahoma looks to keep the momentum going when they travel to face old rival Colorado City, 0-3, on Friday for the Wolves' homecoming. "Their record is not what everybody is wanting, but it doesn't matter what their record is. It's still a big rivalry game," Joslin said. Stanton focused on itself. After two consecutive losses, the Stanton football team is looking to regroup and refocus, heading into this week's home game against Pecos. The Buffaloes, 1-2, are coming off a 34-14 loss to Forsan, and head coach Cody Hogan said his team shot itself in the foot too many times. "We had a couple of self-inflicted mistakes, and you can't make the mistakes that we made and expect to win," Hogan said. "We have to figure out a couple of things, and we have to stop putting the ball on the ground like we did on Friday night." Hogan said the matchup against the Eagles, 1-1, should be a good one, but the main thing his team has to do is focus on itself and improving. "We knew that by installing a new offense, there were going to be some adjustments, so now we've got to fix what we're doing wrong and get better with each week," he said. Garden City ready for big test. After taking care of business against Trinity last week, number 4 ranked Garden City is preparing for a tough stretch, beginning with the trip to number 3 ranked May on Friday. The Bearcats, 3-0, are coming off a mercy-ruled 61-0 victory over the Chargers, in which they scored 54 points in the first quarter and held Trinity to minus 26 yards on offense. It was good to rest some kids that were injured, and we were able to come out hot, Garden City coach Jeff Jones said. We knew we were favored going into the game, so to get that good start is what we were looking for. Jones said young backs Preston Dellinger, 151 yards rushing, 2 TDs on 6 carries, and Carson Goodwin, 43 yards, TD on 4 carries, played well, and they continue to get some good experience. May, 3-0, should be a tougher test, as the Tigers are coming off an 81-58 victory over Knox City and are averaging 72 points a game. They are very good. They're in the top 5 for a reason, Jones said. They're big, they're fast, they do a good job run blocking, and they are battle-tested, being the state runner-up last year. It's going to be a tough game and a good long drive. Jones said this game will be good for his team to prepare for the tough district play coming up next month, and added that the team seems to be excited to take on May. The kids are feeling good about it, Jones said. Monday is kind of our learning day, and the kids were moving around real well on Tuesday, so they are pumped up about it. They're excited to play a 3-game stretch like this. After taking on May, the Bearcats face Class 1A Division 1 defending state champion Westbrook on the road, and then host Van Horn, the team that knocked off the Bearcats in last year's area round. And now here is the private school report. Faster start is goal for MCS in first home game, by Oscar Leroy. After traveling about 2,200 miles over the last 3 weeks and posting a 1-2 record, the Midland Christian football team needs some home cooking. The Mustangs will finally get to play at home when they host San Antonio Cornerstone, 0-3, at 7 p.m. Friday for their homecoming game. MCS would definitely like to get off to a better start than they have in their previous 3 road games. In last week's 48-28 loss to Texarkana Pleasant Grove, the number 6 ranked team in UIL's Class 4A Division 2, the Mustangs fell behind 21-0 after the first quarter and then 34-0 in the second quarter before Dawson Bullard's 6-yard TD run late in the first half got the Mustangs on the board, but still trailing 34-7 at the break. It was the same story second verse in getting off to a slow start, MCS coach Chris Cunningham said. Again, we got in a hole against a really good football team. Once again, we fought back, and I love the way we finished the first half and love the way we started the second half. One of the things I was pleased with coming out of the game was the physicality of our offensive line and us being able to run the football against a very good defense and defensive line. Cunningham said part of the reason for the slow starts this season is the lack of consistency. Football is a game of momentum and rhythm, and we have not gotten into a rhythm at the beginning of games, Cunningham said. We're either not able to go down that first series and score, or in this last game, we deferred and we were not able to get a stop on, I believe it was the 3rd-and-12, and they were able to convert. You've got to be able to make that stop in that at that point in the game. Cunningham said the coaching staff has done a good job of making adjustments at halftime, and now the Mustangs have to figure out how to take what they're doing well at the start of the second half and do those things at the start of the game. We've got to find a way to have that type of mentality early and have an urgent mentality, he said. It's critical that we start fast. We get another opportunity to get that done this week. The Mustangs rushed for 287 yards as a team and were led by Bullard, who finished with 146 yards and 3 TDs on 17 carries. Quarterback Blake Pruitt and Keller Weathers also ran the ball well. Pruitt was also 15 of 22 passing for 148 yards and an interception, as Cunningham thought the senior played well in his return from a shoulder injury. I was real proud of him, said Cunningham of Pruitt. I thought he threw the ball pretty well, and our protection was pretty solid. So Blake feels like he can use his legs to buy time in the passing game. He's going to have to be a dual threat quarterback for us with emphasis in the passing game, but he had some nice runs.
BMI and diminishing height. To your good health for Thursday. Dear Dr. Roach, is there any guidance in adjusting BMI to reflect diminishing height? Age plus a curved spine has left me at least 2 inches shorter than my height when I was middle-aged. My weight has remained stable, but the shrinking height data point now places me in the overweight category. I'm already careful with my diet and exercise, and I'm not eager for further restrictions. Dr. Roach writes, the body mass index, BMI, is a formula intended to correct a person's weight for their height and give a single number to describe whether a person is overweight. Honestly, I don't worry about a BMI in the overweight category, 25 to 30, because it does not put a person at higher risk for medical complications. The BMI is a flawed measurement that is mostly effective at predicting mortality in populations, but is poor for individuals. Losing some height due to kyphosis, the most common spine curvature of older people, does not affect your risk for developing heart disease, but it may be a sign of osteoporosis. So, be sure you have had a test of your bone density. Losing weight does not lead to improved health, except among people who are morbidly obese. It's much more important to have a good diet, such as a Mediterranean-style diet, and to get at least moderate exercise.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, September 15th. Wedding plans clouded by young man's mental illness. Dear Abby, after 3 years together, my fiancé and I plan to be married next year. While we have the usual couples things going on, one concern is making me consider postponing the wedding or ending the engagement. My fiancé has a son whose mental illness led him to withdraw from high school at 16. He has done nothing since. He doesn't work, and his father hasn't gotten him treatment for his issues. I made it clear at the beginning of our relationship that I have no desire for us to be lifelong caretakers to someone who refuses to help himself. He doesn't want to tell his son to leave. Nobody wants to take him in, and he constantly flips between wanting treatment and not wanting treatment. I told my fiancé he has until later this year to figure out what to do about this, or we will have to postpone the wedding. He said if we postpone now, what's to stop me from postponing again in the future? You mentioned that we should work through this as a couple and get married with this unresolved if necessary. I told him this is an important issue that needs to be resolved before the wedding. I applaud him for being a single father and raising his son from such a young age. Please let me know your thoughts on the situation. Signed, Big Dilemma in Indiana. Dear Dilemma, when a person marries into a family, they marry into its problems. No family is without them. If you don't want to share the responsibility of his mentally ill son, you should not marry this man. Rather than make him choose between the two of you, assume the responsibility for making the decision. If your fiancé doesn't already know about the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, he should look into it. NAMI comprises families with the same problems he is facing, and it might help him to know what has worked for them. Its website is NAMI.org. Should you decide to go through with the marriage, you should consider joining as well. Dear Abby, at what age do you stop holding hands when you go for walks? I say never, but my boyfriend thinks we're too old to be holding hands because it's a teenager thing. I'm 61, and he is 60. I have just started dating again, and I love the feeling of holding his hand. I had never had that during my two marriages. I am white, and he is black. He says it's something black folks don't do. I'm not sure about that because I have seen a lot of couples of many ages and races holding hands. How do I get him to understand that holding hands gives me comfort and a good feeling? Signed, Affectionate in New York. Dear Affectionate, if you have told your boyfriend you need this and he responds by making excuses and ignoring you, then face it. He isn't receptive. Is he also unwilling to hold hands in private? Holding hands is not uncommon in black culture. Many African-American couples of every age hold hands and enjoy doing it. From where I sit, your boyfriend is either not affectionate or is reluctant to display affection in public because you are an interracial couple and he is concerned about unwanted attention.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.